What's up, guys? Thank you so much once again for tuning in to the Dental Marketer Podcast. This episode is brought to you by... Actually, it's brought to you by something very interesting that I'm going to take some time to talk about. Facebook Ignite by Dr. Anissa Holmes. Guys, I'm pretty sure everybody in this podcast knows who Dr. Anissa Holmes is. She's also from the Delivering Wild podcast. She is literally, if Facebook and dentistry had a creator, she would probably be the person who you would go to, because she's the one who created both of those two things to attract new patients. Like, she is, she's legit. She's a dentist, you know, and she has come out with a program, an online training session. And it's not like every online training session. This is completely different because you're literally working with her one-on-one. And it's not like a crazy amount, you know, $1,000. No. I mean, it's literally to ignite your dental practice. And honestly, like, let me read a little bit to you. It's a one-of-a-kind live three-session online training. And it's going to teach your team the exact strategies that dental practices are using to get 25-plus new patients a month from Facebook. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, 25 new patients a month. But let me tell you, the ROI is insane on this. I mean, there's dentists who literally spent $2.40 and they're attracting 8 new patients. And there's this one dentist right here, Sarah Ritchie. She's the office manager. She created an ad, right? And it just ended her ad. It was a 5-day ad on Facebook. And she spent $29 on that, which in return, she got 15 likes, 26 offers were accepted, 2 phone calls, and that all equaled to $9,200 in revenue. I'm gonna let that sink in right now for a bit. That was $29 spent, and she got $9,200 in return. I mean, like, I don't know why you wouldn't want to be a part of this program or sign up to it, but it's like I said, it's a 3-session online Facebook boot camp. And Dr. Anissa Holmes works directly with you. It's not like a program where you buy it and then you'll get a follow-up emails. No, she's working one-on-one with your team, you know, direct contact with you. She's going to give you the exact tools and strategies you need to guarantee new patients. So if, for example, you say like, okay, I'm not getting any new patients, it's not like there's no one to talk to. No, you're talking with the creator of all this one-on-one. In live, you know, like live sessions. So you're also going to get more revenue, obviously, and you're going to honestly just stop wasting money on marketing strategies that don't work. I mean, there's so many out there, but this is tried and true. This is proven. This is legit proven. And like, your team will learn what really works to get patients from Facebook. You're also going to learn about Facebook pixels. Dr. Anissa Holmes will work with your team to set up the Facebook pixels. She's also going to work with your team to set up Facebook audiences to use when boosting posts or creating ad campaigns. She's also going to work with your team to set up a Facebook campaign that has proven to bring in 20 new patients. So already, you guys are already pretty much getting guaranteed 20 new patients. And then she's also going to work with your team to set up Facebook Messenger bots to interact with people when they message your page or respond to your posts or campaigns. She's literally going to teach your whole team how to grow your dental practice with Facebook. So you can stop wasting money on expensive marketing that doesn't work. Or even if you're thinking about, like, you know how you see sometimes those, like, quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes with my fingers, Facebook gurus that say, hey, I'm testing out these, you know, new theories on Facebook ads. Can I do your thing for free? Just pay me for the ad. No, like, what's the whole point of doing that if you can just do this? Who she knows what she's doing. She's done it with her own dental practice and hundreds of dental practices, and it's worked. It's proven. Like, just to put the cherry on top, guys, use the link that I'm going to give you. It's deliveringwow.com/TDM. So let me just make sure that's what it is here. Delivering Wow. Yes, deliveringwow.com/TDM. And I'm going to give you $100 off your purchase anyways. So use my, and I'm not going to lie, if you use my affiliate link, you know, I do get some money in my pocket, which I super appreciate. Thank you so much for that. So yeah, use that link. You'll get $100 off. You'll be supporting me as well. And yeah, just go ahead, click the link even if you're unsure, just click the link, use the link, and then you'll see so much information. Just from this page alone, you'll probably get enough information to do your own thing. But just click the link, and I'm pretty sure you guys will just love every single result. If you guys are still unsure, message her. You know, message her, message me, see how we can work together. And if you're still unsure, message all the dentists who've used it and see how they're working with it and everything like that. But anyways, enough about that. Just go deliveringwow.com/TDM. That's it. Okay, so this episode, we're going to be talking with Keith McLaughlin. Now, this guy literally knows this stuff when it comes to hiring team members. He has his own company. And we talk about so many interesting topics. Pretty much, we mainly mention the importance of the top line and bottom line. You need to always manage the top line, but don't obsess too much about the bottom line. And I know you're asking yourself, okay, Michael, what's the top line and bottom line? Well, listen to the episode to find out. And also, don't obsess over so much trying to control cost on certain things. We also talk about what is your definition of a good team member, and paying somebody for doing something you can't measure is not the best way to spend your money, obviously. And so how can you measure it? We'll talk about that too. And then how to deal with employees who aren't performing their best, and how to find employees who are invested in your company and they will perform their best. And we'll talk about so much more. He is one of the pioneers of Invisalign. I'm talking about when it very, very first started off, he was there, okay? And also, you know, his friends are also the pioneers of Dentrix and things like that. So he knows what he's talking about when it comes to dentistry. But guys, without further ado, here is episode 63. Keith, how are you doing today?
Doing great, Michael. Thank you so much.
That's amazing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your past, present, and future? What have you done and what you got going on today?
Love to. So thank you for having me, first and foremost, Michael. I'd like to start by just letting your audience know that I'm a dental person. I identify as a dental person first before all, because my career from the very early start, my second job back in 1994 was for a dental manufacturer, and I was selling to dentists and dental owners back in Texas, East Texas, for 6 years. And then I was recruited to work for Align Technology. Many of your audience would know Invisalign. Uh-huh. Worked with Invisalign for 14 years, from 2000 to 2014. And that was a very fun, exciting ride, going from startup with $0 in revenue to now they're up over the billion mark. So it's pretty exciting, or getting very close to the billion mark. It's pretty exciting to see where they've come today. Mm-hmm. And back in 2014, my partner and I, Rand O'Connor, we decided that, you know, I was in a place in my career where I enjoyed what I was doing. I enjoyed the people development aspect of it. I enjoyed the product, but I really knew that there was something more, a better challenge that I could take on. And my partner and I collaborated and decided that that there was a big pain point in dentistry, and that is, where do we hearing doctors and dental business owners say, ask the question of where do we find good team members or good talent? And so we jumped in and decided that that was a good place to start. Of course, not having been recruiters, we had a lot to learn there. But our largest value proposition is that we understand the dental business. Unlike most recruiters who are generalist in nature, some of them are very niche, some of them are very specialized, but we are niche to dentistry. We know dentistry, we're dental people. Recruiting came secondarily, but my background in hiring and onboarding and recruiting as a manager really helped me shorten that learning curve. Rand and my partner has been in consulting with Pinnacle Leadership Academy. Mm-hmm. Some of your audience locally in the Southwest United States may have heard of Rand O'Connor. Mm-hmm. So she has helped dental businesses grow since 1995. And she started with Open Medical Systems, mm-hmm. which now is Dentrix. So that's really where what brought us here almost 3 years now. This summer will be 3 years since we started the venture, and it's been exciting. And every day I talk to either a dental business owner or somebody at the practice that just says, gosh, where have you guys been? This is so needed, and we're just so excited that we have this opportunity now that, you know, because none of us are trained in how to, you know, evaluate talent and manage talent and help to set clear expectations in a job description and mm-hmm. then do performance evaluation. So the having, you know, us be an instrument or a resource for them to at least cut that very exhaustive piece of evaluating talent, that's where we find our most value for our clients, is just taking that burden off of them. So that's mm-hmm. a little bit about where I've been, where I am today, and excited for the future.
Yeah. So you helped start up Invisalign pretty much, right?
Yeah. I was the 26th salesperson wow. hired. So back in, they had hired their first salespeople in October of 99, and they were just starting to ship commercial cases. And so I was brought in April of 2000. There was one person covering three states, and I essentially took the north part of Texas and Oklahoma. And my counterpart took Houston and Louisiana. The original person took San Antonio. So we were essentially that South team. And then we were selling to just orthodontic specialists at first. So we mm-hmm. didn't even have a general dentistry focus at the time, but that changed back in 2002. So yes, it's funny because many of my friends have heard me describe it as this, but it was really the Wild West. I mean, it was sort of, because you really didn't have a roadmap on how to get a product that was a concept, not just a product that they could substitute for wire and brackets necessarily, right? It wasn't just another appliance. It wasn't just another bracket to sell. It was a completely different concept. Mm-hmm. But the concept excited the orthodontic specialist because they knew how many patients potentially would want to get treated with something that was clear and removable. So it was exciting, but the actual execution and implementation of it was a little bit challenging for many of the specialists, to say the least. But the product went through its challenges, and I would say probably in 2008, it really turned a corner mm-hmm. in that it really started getting to be, it was a very tribal knowledge-led product, meaning you had to really understand the idiosyncrasies to do well at it. Yeah. But once the company started producing a predictable product based on the ClinCheck software, that's where it really took off to another level. It was just so exciting. I loved the years that I spent with Align and still cherish them to this day.
Wow. That's
but good stuff. I'm excited about this opportunity because I love the people aspect, and this gets mm-hmm. me this gets me to my sweet spot, which is adding value to people.
Yeah. And what was, if you can recall, what was like the biggest roadblock or the struggle that you felt Invisalign had?
Oh boy. I would say that our biggest struggle was the fact that it was a company that was backed by venture capital. Mm-hmm. And it was not a product that was born out of a university study. So mm-hmm. essentially, I can take you through quickly the history. Zia Chisti and Kelsey Wirth were graduate students at Stanford. And this was sort of a concept created by Zia Chisti. He was in traditional orthodontic therapy. He was in a clear removable retainer, but would notice that when he went prolonged time periods without the appliance, without the retainer, that his teeth would shift. And subsequently, when he would put the retainer back in place, the teeth would move back into that position. And he thought, if it's possible to move my teeth this way, why can't you do the whole treatment this way? That kind of got his interest peaked. And he figured out, since 1945, they've been using removable positioners. So it was kind of that idea, and I think it took somebody outside of orthodontic circles to come up with that idea, because, and no offense to orthodontists, but they're evidence-based, and they really want to see the proof in the science, and they like to keep it within the lines of what is possible mm-hmm. and what has been possible. So it took somebody outside of orthodontics to say, why not? Let's try it. And so he knew that you had to take the digital treatment plan. You had to turn a physical impression into a digital treatment plan, treat the digital treatment plan, and then replicate each stage of treatment with a physical model that you could make the plastic aligners on. So I simplified that a whole heck of a lot, but that was his journey, is to figure all that out. But when he did, he shopped the idea around to a lot of schools, and they were like, I don't think so. But then Bob Boyd at the University of Pacific in San Francisco, he bit in and took it on and started doing some studies. And I think they had treated 9 cases, and all the while Z is trying to, shop it around to investors. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest roadblock proved that the venture capital money aligned before the science really was proving that it worked. Okay. Mm. And if you know venture capitalists, they're not patient people. Yeah. So they wanted to see some results pretty quickly, and they weren't going to give it 10 years for studies to take place. And so that's really what hurt us, is when we went to the orthodontic community, even though doctors get the concept and they understood the potential, they really didn't see the science that supported that it worked. And that was a huge hurdle. Now, you had some visionary doctors, however, and I think that was the key difference, is they're like, look, out of the box, it doesn't work, but I have to figure out how it works. Mm-hmm. And once they overcame that setback, that initial learning curve, they really started differentiating themselves amongst their peers in each market. And so very early on, we had these pioneers that were essentially setting themselves apart as to being the Invisalign person or the Invisalign practice in the area. Yeah. And creating a huge, huge demand amongst the prospective patient community, especially adults who weren't going to wear fixed appliances. So that I would say that the fact that we didn't let UOP really even finish most of the early cases, we didn't allow them to continue on with the study for years and years before commercially introducing the product, that hurt us a little bit.
That's good to know. That's interesting. Huh? Yeah, really interesting stuff. That's your lesson on Invisalign. Yeah. All right. So what's one technique, tactic, strategy, or procedure that you have used or seen to increase your dental practice's profit?
Oh, wow. I would say I've seen many examples, but clearly, we have exposure to some partners that are very, very successful practices, and then we have some that struggle. And I think the key difference is the ability to bring in the best people, to bring in people that are smarter than you. Mm-hmm. I just read an article on what sets successful businesses, dental businesses, apart from not so successful dental businesses. And it's really that, and again, all due respect to dentists, but they many times think inwardly and not necessarily outwardly as to who can I bring in that is better, stronger, faster than I. I'm still the clinical dentist here, but who can I enroll to bring into the practice that I can delegate to and know that it's going to get done. So it's bringing in people that the brightest, and that means you have to pay them very, very well. Mm-hmm. And because the brightest people aren't going to come work for you unless it's attractive to them financially. So and that's I think that's the biggest dichotomy, is that, well, even as a business owner myself, I want the best and brightest, but I want to pay the average. I want to pay the industry wage, right? Mm-hmm. But I have to break through that temptation to say, no, I'm paying for best and brightest, not for average. So I have to pay top dollar. And that's what I would want to just impart to the dental business owners out there, is you cannot expect top performance and pay average to low wages. It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think that is? Do you think it's because we kind of fear that, what if they leave and we paid them quite substantially a good amount? Or why do you think that is, that sometimes dentists feel like, okay, this is the minimum, or this is how much we're going to pay, but I expect top dollar performance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's a great question. It's easy. It's easy to manage the bottom line. And I think that's where dental business owners think they can exercise the most control on costs. Right. And mm-hmm. again, I'm sensitive to it, because in many cases, you know, the average is, you know, 75% operational cost, and some are even into the 80s, sadly. But, you know, really good ones are in the 60s and maybe in the 50s if they're really good. But I think it becomes in too much observation of the bottom line and not paying attention to the top line. So if you're paying attention to the top line, then yeah, you want to always manage costs, but the top line should always be up and to the right, whereas the bottom line will also go up and to the right, just not proportionately, right? So you mm-hmm. always want to say, okay, my costs are going to rise as my top line rises, but I think the habit that we find ourselves into as owners, we want to always control costs and not necessarily invest in the top line. So yeah. that's where it is. And I mean, it's just a terrible habit that we create in wanting to control something and have a sense of ownership. I can absolutely manage the bottom line, but I don't know how I can invest in the top line exactly. Yeah, I guess I could throw advertising dollars and getting more new patients and a campaign to drive more new patients. But you know, how is that going to work if I have a team member that really is inferior and can't really convert the leads that I get? So you kind of get into that slippery slope of this is the best I'm going to get, so why should I have to pay more? And that's just, you should never, never focus on that side of the business. But we do, and it's human nature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you mentioned before that the keys to finding good team members, right? But what is like your definition of a good team member? How do you know if a team member's good? Because there's sometimes the case where we might say, you know what, this team member I just hired puts out this fire, but kind of doesn't do anything about the other fires, or you know what I mean? Like maybe he's great at answering mm-hmm. phones, but he's not so good at numbers or coding or you know, what have you. So, like, what is a good team member?
Wow. I would say for the team, just focusing on my own business, that I think can relate very well to a dental business and dental business owner, is having somebody feel like they are invested in your business. When the business does well, they benefit. When the business doesn't do well, they take it personally. Right, to where they feel that their efforts are instrumental in the business, And I think that's where you can make a huge separation in people. Some people are just there for the paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to get rid of those people, right? Mm-hmm. Even if they're doing their function, even if they're fulfilling expectations, I guess you have to mitigate that. But if they're exceeding their expectations, however, not really, you know, invested in the growth of your business, you have to maybe have that conversation about expectations, because rarely will somebody who is invested in the business not exceed expectations. Most likely, somebody who's not even fulfilling expectations won't have an innate investment in your business. They just won't. And I think that's what separates good team members is, you know, I remember going back to a story of a line, you know, Invisalign,
mm-hmm.
there was a time that I felt, and we call it, I would have bled a line blue, because mm-hmm. if somebody took a shot at the company, I was going to defend them. I was going to take that bullet, right? Because I believed so passionately in what we were doing. You know, we were changing an industry,
mm-hmm.
and I believed so passionately. And I think that's what we look for in team members, is people that value you and believe so much in your product that they're willing to, you know, take it personally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even in business, take it personally.
Yeah.
So that's what separates.
Yeah. And how can you get someone to care about your business like the way the business owner cares? Like, say, for example, you already have your staff, right? You already have a team and they're great. They're obviously there for, you know, the paycheck as well, because they need to eat, you know. But how can you get them more involved? Or how can we just find someone who cares as much as the business owner?
That's a great question, because it doesn't come with the average interview questions, mm-hmm. you know. Why did you leave your last job? You know, what kind of job are you looking for? You know, here's the secret. Well, I'll take that back. There is no secret, but here's a little insight.
Mm-hmm.
The insight is that everybody wants to work for something that is bigger than themselves. Everybody wants to be a part of something bigger than themselves, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why people stay at companies, because they feel like they're valued and that they're a part of something greater than themselves. It's the human nature. Human nature is they want to be part of something bigger than themselves. But so say maybe day one they come in with those aspirations, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, maybe the team around them, they're a bunch of C players. And so it brings that A, you know, A, maybe a B+ player down into the C's, because they're around a bunch of people. And then they take the mindset of, well, why should I care? Nobody else cares,
exactly.
Right? So it's and you can evaluate these people is just get to know them, not their job description or their duty, you know, their skills. Don't interview their skills, interview them as people,
mm-hmm.
and understand, you know, what their passions are, what is their desire, because you can pick up on that behavior very quickly. If they're not involved in a cause, maybe a volunteer cause of some sort, or they're passionate about something, be it their church or maybe scouts or Wounded Warrior. If they're not involved in contribution and serving in some capacity, then likely they're not going to bring that to your business.
Yeah. I also talk about that as far as leadership, about the A players and the B players and the C players. If you hear a couple uh-huh. of my past episodes, like if you do have any C players in there, I mean, they're going to bring down your B players. But if you have your A players, you know, and you eliminate the C players, the B players are going to be motivated eventually to become the A players. Yeah.
Yep.
But if you never cut off those C players and you just let them grow there, I mean, eventually those A players are going to be B players, and then all those B players are going to be C players, and then you're going to have a bunch of people just complaining, like, hey, when is my next raise? You don't pay me enough. Or why should I do this? You know,
mm-hmm.
or just a bunch of mm-hmm. things you don't want to have. So, yeah.
Yeah.
What is one strategy, idea, or technique you would never do again? And why?
I would say and this would relate very well just in my current business, that is paying somebody for doing something that you can't measure. So for instance, if I've brought somebody in to do a certain job, but I am unable to follow quantitatively or see the metrics of the return on investment of what I'm paying them, that's going to kill your business. Fortunately, it did not in the certain two situations where we were paying an employee to go find candidates for us. Mm-hmm. Yet the easiest way to measure that would say, okay, did any of these candidates get sourced for the position and hired? That would be the easiest way to quantify. But we were just looking for the candidates to be sourced. We didn't necessarily go to the next level of saying, okay, well, the sourced ones then were placed. Mm-hmm. But we were just looking for, okay, some measure of sort. But we couldn't. So for instance, we would be billed 10 to 15 hours of work in a week, and really nothing was measurable. Nothing, and not, I couldn't quantify any of the results. So that for me was, and what I learned from that was it wasn't on the person so much, although maybe I could say there was some accountability there, but I think it was more on me not setting up the measurement tool by which and set the expectation of which, okay, for $20 an hour for 15 hours of work in a week, this is the result that I expect. And if we're short of that, we're going to have a conversation. And if we're continually short of that, we're going to either A, reduce the pay or lower the number of hours. So it was me not holding that person accountable enough. Gotcha. And so what I would say to that is make sure that each person has a clear job description that have expectations attached to it. That's something that I've learned the hard way mm-hmm. a few times. And I'll probably still learn it, but I'm getting better at identifying it.
Mm-hmm. So is that how you fixed the issue as far as measuring how your candidates were or how the person would get candidates? You measured it?
Yes.
Through
our applicant. So we have an applicant tracking system that gives us reporting. And so it would tell us each time, it would help us to see, okay, well, you know, so-and-so sourced this many people within this defined period of time. So we had the reporting that we could look at. But again, you know, my error in not staying more in tune with the reporting and having, more importantly, those conversations of this is the expectation from the onset. This is what I expect for this pay for this many hours. This is the result I expect. And if we're short of that, let's have a conversation of if I've been too lofty in my expectations or if you can do better in your results. Mm-hmm. And that's key. And let's face it. I mean, especially for the dentists who are single practice owners and really don't have an HR generalist or somebody, an office manager that can handle that. Those are difficult conversations. Yeah. And at the end of the day, you really just want to do dentistry. You didn't always sign up for the dental business part of it. You signed up for the, you know, doing great dentistry and caring for patients. So I understand that those conversations are so difficult and it's the last thing you want to do, but it's essential. Mm-hmm, in growing your business and making a more successful business.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're definitely right. Yeah. And so how would you support, like, for example, okay, say, because this works really well for a dentist, right? Say you, mm-hmm. as far as your advice, you tell them, okay, you know what? That means you got to be very descriptive in your job descriptions, right? And tell them exactly Absolutely. What you expect. Now, say the employee says, okay, yeah, sounds good. I can do all this because, you know, they want to get hired. And then they get mm-hmm. hired, and then they tell them, you know what? They tell the practice owner, you know what? I am doing everything, but I think you're just asking for too much. I mean, I can't really do this. Your practice is growing, or I'm getting too many phone calls. When I answer, the conversations are going too long, or I'm screening through the coding, or the coding's changing, and I'm screening through the employee's ledger just to make sure I got everything right. And everything you ask for, it's a little too much. I mean, you know what I mean? Because they're not performing their best.
Absolutely.
How would you deal with that, or how would you deal with that?
Well, there's a couple of different ways. So starting with the very basic is that I would have an employee manual that had every job that your business has listed. Okay, so if you are a scheduling coordinator, this is your job function. This is your responsibility. This is what you do. This is good performance. This is poor performance, right? And so you have that in the employee manual. And then as you bring them on board, part of the paperwork that they should be signing is a copy of their job description and the expectations. Mm-hmm. And once they sign that, you have agreed that this is the expectation. Now, it doesn't mean that those expectations can't ever be renegotiated, but they're taking on this role with the expectation, and they've signed off on the expectation saying, I can do this. And so later when they say, I can't do this, you can have that conversation, what we call managing by expectation. You could say, well, you actually signed the expectations list, and we can talk about renegotiating it for sure, but it's not going to be, hey, I just want to do less and make the same amount of money. We can have that conversation, but you did sign this piece of paper that said you could do this and you are capable of doing this. So let's renegotiate if you want to renegotiate.
Gotcha.
And that usually will have them change their behavior for the good, or it'll have them leave.
Yeah.
In each case, I say leave like it's so easy and but it's tough. It's very tough. But the fact is, having a great team, it's like a great marriage. It doesn't mm-hmm. just happen. You have to be intentional. You have to invest in the relationship in order to get maximum performance.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what's the best piece of advice you have ever received that can help my listeners simplify, accelerate, or completely change their practice in a positive way?
Well, I'm going to echo something I said earlier, and that is always manage the top line and don't manage the bottom line, but don't focus only on the bottom line. So there's really three rules. Focus on the top line, don't obsess about the bottom line, and then rule number three is refer to rule number one, essentially.
And so
it's that simple.
And just to reiterate, what's the bottom line and the top line?
Okay. Yeah. Top line is your growth, is your revenue. In a dental practice, it's the production.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So managing the top line, manage the production, build the production line. Don't obsess about your costs. Now, when I say don't obsess, it doesn't mean don't pay attention to. You obviously want to pay attention to it, but don't let that drive your decision-making. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let that bottom line make you decide whether somebody, that you could hire that is $3 more an hour worth it or not, because it might make your cost go up marginally. Think about the top line and what that person can invest in your business to grow the production line. Because mm-hmm. I promise you, for $3 more an hour, if they're is superior performance there, your top line will grow disproportionately better than your bottom line will go up.
Mm-hmm. And how can someone measure that? Like in the sense, like say you just got an employee, right? You just hired an employee and you're paying them what, like maybe let's just for, for like lack of, you're paying them like $12 an hour, right? And
Certainly.
That's pretty much like what, I mean, like, let's just say that's what the market goes for, right? And then they're mm-hmm. performing pretty well. I mean, as far as you can see, your profit margin is going up, right? And then you start thinking, you know what? We can probably do more. Should I hire someone else who can do more? Or what are your thoughts? Or should I, because what if you hire someone else who can do more, but that means you're going to have to pay them more, but then at the same time, your profit margin is still going up. So would it really matter, or should you just keep the same employee you have, or just hire someone else who can do more? And you know what I mean? Because maybe that the employee mm-hmm. you currently have right now has already capped out. They can't do anything else anymore. What do you think the practice owner should do?
It's an interesting scenario, because what I would say is it depends on the role. If this person is directly associated with closing or converting treatment, let's say that, then I would make it to where every time you benefit or the practice benefits, that they benefit. Make it a performance-based compensation, or at least a portion being maybe a base salary plus a percentage of what they close. Mm-hmm. If they are more indirectly involved in that, maybe it's and again, every team member has an impact in the practice. Don't get me wrong by saying this, but if it's somebody that maybe is a lab tech or somebody who is in sterilization, they're less. There's efficiency involved there, but they're less tied to that. So I would say it depends on the role. And I'm a big fan of people that are directly involved in increasing your top line. Then you always want to pay them more, because as the top line grows, if you've started paying them more, but your top line stops growing, then you get to have that crucial conversation. Right. Yeah. But I wouldn't necessarily pay somebody that maybe you make a team bonus or something like that, to where it creates more of a team atmosphere. But for somebody that's very indirectly involved in that top line growth, you would more closely adhere to average standards, unless you've hired somebody that has great potential. So for instance, what I mean by that is maybe they don't have experience, but they have great potential. So you train them into an entry level role. And then if they do that job, not just fulfill the expectations of that job, but exceed the expectations, you move them into another role, which affords them the opportunity to make more money in a different role. And I've seen people that started as a lab technician become an office manager or an operations manager. It does happen because they have great potential. And it's not just you're hiring for skills, you're hiring for potential. And that's the key there. That's another great piece of advice that I've heard. And again, I don't take credit for this. I give it to other great speakers out there who say hire for potential, don't hire for skills.
That's good. Yeah. That's good advice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just a side question, like just out of my own curiosity, you reading any books right now?
I am actually. I am reading a book called Insanely Simple: The Obsession That Drives Apple's Success. It's just essentially an insight into what makes Apple go. And it's, people think it's complex, but as the book suggests, it's not very complex.
Yeah.
They are masters at creating a market, not just creating a product for an existing market, but creating a market. It's brilliant, actually.
This is good.
But I love books on leadership, business. I'm a huge fan of John Maxwell. John Maxwell. He's I like to think he's a mentor that doesn't know me.
Yeah,
even though we've met, he wouldn't know who I was if you mentioned my name. But I love what he brings, and I like to think that he's taught me more than I'll ever be able to teach him back.
Yeah, no, that's good.
About
that's
leadership.
Good. What was the book called? You said Insanely Simple?
Yeah, Insanely Simple, the Obsession That Drives Apple's Success by Ken Siegel.
Huh, I got to read that book. I'm going to look into it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All righty, Keith, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a pleasure. But before we say goodbye, tell us where it is we can find you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again, Michael. It's been a pleasure speaking with you and hopefully imparting some value to your audience. And we are Dental Team Finder. We have a website, www.dentalteamfinder.com. Like us on Facebook. We are a dental niche recruitment firm. So we hope to see you and hopefully add value to you one day.
Awesome. Awesome. And yeah, Dental Team Finder website and also the social media links will be in the show notes below. Thank you so much again, Keith, for being with us. It was a pleasure and we'll hear from you soon. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Before you guys move on to the next episode, first, I want to say thank you for tuning into the Dental Marketer Podcast. Also, if you guys haven't heard yet, The Making of Smile & Co., a new series that's hosted on the Dental Marketer Podcast that me and Dr. Ashley Hovez, a dentist from Folsom, California, are doing. Guys, go check it out. It's a whole different vibe, a whole different type of style. It's not like this interview style. It's more what we're doing is documenting her, the making of her dental practice in real time from scratch to 1 year out when she's open. So yeah, go listen to it. It's more of storytelling. I put in a lot of work into it, so just go check it out. I'd appreciate it. Give me your feedback. Also, don't forget deliveringwow.com/TDM, and the link is going to be in the show notes below. Guys, go check it out. Use the link below in the show notes, deliveringwow.com/TDM, so you guys can get $100 off your purchase. And don't worry, it's not even going to be like $1,900, $800, $700. It's not going to be a lot of money, this Facebook Ignite session or class or program. It's so much more. It's just click the link just to see the information on it so you guys will know about it. And yeah, use it. If you guys decide to purchase it, use my link, like I said, for $100 off. I'd appreciate it so much because it does put some money in my pocket. So thank you. Also, don't forget to follow me on Instagram and Facebook under The Dental Marketer. That's the name for both of the social media links. And those links are going to be below in the show notes as well. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you soon.